Now this morning, we want to look at this wonderful subject of celebrating the Lord or rejoicing in the Lord. There was once a preacher who was going to be speaking on this subject, rejoicing in the Lord, and his doorman, the guy who was on the door, was trying to get people to come in. And this guy came along and he said, "Hoy," he said, "you do well to come in here tonight." He says, "Why is that?" He says, "The preacher's speaking on rejoicing in the Lord." And the man said, he says, "No," he says, "I'm sorry," he says, "I've enough problems of my own. I'll give it a miss." True story that, yeah? So I hope we leave a wee bit higher than that today when we consider this great subject. Now, Tom Wright makes an interesting comment in his book on Philippians, and he suggests that the term rejoice in the Lord or celebrate in the Lord has the idea of a public celebration behind it. Now, if that's true, we need to ask, why would Paul encourage a public celebration in the Lord? Well, the world at Ephesus and Philippi and Corinth and elsewhere were always organizing festivals and games to celebrate their gods and their cities, not least the new god Caesar himself. And it was common in these main centres of commerce and religion for processions to go down the streets where they would celebrate their gods. And perhaps what Paul is hinting at here is, if the idolaters in Philippi can get all excited and exuberant about their pagan gods and their festivals, then surely, surely the Christians have far more reason to celebrate because they have peace with God. You know, there is something even more important in the World Cup, yeah? There is. Slightly. And it is this, that we celebrate the fact that we can have peace with God. We can rejoice in the Lord. But Paul adds, the rejoicing should be marked by gentleness, or another translation says graciousness or moderation. You know, the public image of the church is actually very important. How we think we are perceived may be a lot different from how we are actually perceived. And this raises challenges today for the evangelical church. Is our public image one of gentleness and graciousness and moderation? Or is our public image more one of contention and judgmentalism and sometimes hard-heartedness? It would be very interesting to know what is evident to all about our church community in this local area. What do they see as evident to all? It'd be interesting to know that. We might be surprised, we might even be shocked. But the important thing is this, the top of Paul's list is that our gentleness should be evident to all. An evangelical church, I think, as a whole, I don't know which rung of the ladder gentleness would be on, but it wouldn't be, I'm sure, that high up. And I think that's a challenge for us in this day, that our gentleness is evident to all. Now, Paul adds, the Lord is near. And this could be read two ways. It could mean the Lord is near in that he is present by his Spirit in our midst. And that's true. And we can't see the Lord, but we often witness the signs of his presence when we gather together for corporate worship. We sometimes sense that the Lord is near, and that's a wonderful thing for us to experience. But equally, it could mean the Lord is near. That is, his return is near. There's a sense of the nearness of the Lord, and that should obviously influence our celebrations and our corporate worship. You know, a number of years ago, I went on holiday with the Woolley Harrison for a few days, and we set off following the South Deeside Road up to Crathay and across the bridge there to carry on our journey. But as we approached there, we were stopped by a policeman who said that we weren't allowed to go any further. He informed us that the Queen was arriving in the next half an hour. Now, Willie and I had no idea that the Queen was coming. It was quite a surprise for us. But anyway, we stopped the car and we walked down to the entrance of Balmoral. And there were about 150 supporters waiting for the Queen. They were all super excited and enthused. Some had flowers, there were flags waving, and they were really sensing the nearness of the Queen. And you know, when Willie and I arrived, that was You know, we were completely outside the celebration. Our minds and our day had not been shaped by the nearness of the Queen. But there was no doubting the crowd. In fact, the crowd's joy and anticipation in the next 30 minutes meant that we were caught up in that event as well. And finally, the Queen did arrive. And she stopped and she came out and she spoke to one or two people. And it turned out to be the highlight of the day. Now, as Christians, there should be no doubting what really excites us. The celebration that we enjoy should be the fact, the sense that the Lord is near. You know, so often life is so busy, we hardly even give that a thought. You know, we've just sung this morning, lift up your heads to the coming King. I wonder if that thrills you in any way to think that the King is coming. Does that thought grip you in any way? Would it affect your week this week and the next week to think that the Lord is near? You know, the past generations had in many ways a greater sense of the Lord's nearness, and it affected the way they lived. And we've lost that today because we live such busy lives, we hardly ever take time out to sense and feel the Lord's nearness. And that's a real challenge for us, I think, today. Peterson's paraphrases these verses like this: make it as clear as you can to all you meet that you're on their side, working with them and not against them, helping them to see the Master is about to arrive. He could show up at any minute. Now, if we really believed that the Lord is near and could show up at any minute, I'm sure it would generate in us a greater sense of celebration and joy and gentleness that would change us and influence others as we get ready to meet the King. And as we start this next week, may that truth grip you. The Lord is near. The Lord is near. He could show up at any moment. Now, there are three things that are linked to this celebration in the Lord, and they're prayer, right thinking, and right living. Now, one of the things that we probably fail to fully appreciate about the ancient world is the fact that the ancient world was filled with anxiety. The reason for this was because it was crammed full of gods and goddesses that needed to be constantly pacified. There were constant festivals to bring offerings to the gods in places like Philippi. Now, in pagan worship, and this is very important, in pagan religion, the worshipper always had to take the initiative to appease the gods. The only trouble was the worshipper had no guarantee that even his best sacrifices would fully appease the gods. For the gods were capricious, they were liable to sudden and unpredictable changes in attitude and behavior. They could potentially get you for some small offense that you hadn't even accounted for. So the worshippers were constantly on edge because they didn't know whether or not the gods would bring their wrath against them at any moment. This painting here depicts an offering to an ancient Greek god. And this particular god requires the ultimate sacrifice, that of human life. And the priest's face, if you look at this painting, is marked with anxiety. He's not sure even if this offering is going to be enough to pacify the gods. The poor mother, turning away in absolute despair. And the one to be sacrificed is just a face of horror, while the foreboding gods circle overhead, aloof, unpredictable, demanding. And the painting raises the question, what is it going to take to satisfy the gods and appease the wrath and to bring peace? Now, into this anxiety of the ancient pagan world comes Christianity with a message of good news. And what's the good news? There is a God over all gods in heaven who loves us and who has been moved in compassion and grace towards the plight of a flawed humanity and has taken the initiative to bring peace and reconciliation between the two parties. God, not the worshipper, has provided the sacrifice of himself. And rather than turning his wrath outwards to a rebellious humanity, God has turned his wrath inward, and he bore our sins in his own body on the tree. And the giving up of God's self is so that he will not give up on humanity. And his own sacrifice satisfied the demands of his justice, so that all are free to come for pardon and mercy and find peace with God. And those who accepted the good news of the gospel and Christ's sacrifice on their behalf were liberated from their fears and anxieties of pagan worship. They were liberated from their alienation, their meaninglessness, their fear, their ignorance, their guilt, and their shame. And they were brought into the joyous experience of peace and personal communion with Jesus Christ. Can you imagine the scene there in the midst of that anxiety? Finding God meant everything. No wonder Paul says to them, celebrate the Lord. Celebrate in the Lord. Now, the coming of Christ, or coming to Christ, out of paganism, did not mean that all their troubles disappeared. Far from it. Many of them would have suffered more because they came to faith. And they still would have had their shares of trouble and struggle in the daily grind of life. Many of them were slaves. But what is important is this. Through coming to Christ, they could now confidently come to God through prayer, through the new and living way. They now had a personal relationship with God. They had communion with God. He would listen to their prayers. He was for them, not against them. And because of that, Paul says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God. And no matter what the storms of life, God's peace would guard their hearts and their minds. Before, they had no idea of peace, but now they have peace with God. No wonder Paul is calling the Christians to celebrate, to rejoice in the Lord. Again, I say rejoice. What a wonderful thing it was for them to bring their prayers to the Lord. They couldn't do that with the pagan gods. Now today, we are called to celebrate in the Lord in what has become an age of increasing anxiety. The ancient gods have maybe gone, but they've been replaced by modern idols. And in a subtle way, they bring just as much anxiety into our modern world. One of the West's most celebrated gods is the god of Mammon. And if we look at this picture here, this is actually an article that I took out of the Times a few years ago. It was entitled City of Mammon. And what it does is there were two pictures there, 3 centuries apart. This is the 18th century London, and as you can see along here, the skyline is dominated by spire after spire after spire after spire. It's extraordinary. There's so many spires. There's hundreds of spires. And of course, right here is St. Paul's Cathedral. And the writer was making the point that clearly, at this particular time, God was important in the nation's life. And spirituality was important in the nation's life. And peace with God was important in the nation's life. They believed the security and the peace could only come through God. Now, if we move on 3 centuries, this is London today. St. Paul's here is dwarfed in comparison with all these other buildings. And these buildings today, of course, are all the multinational corporations, which have a massive influence on the world at large. And they send out a completely different message today, that Mammon is God within the British context. The spires have long gone, and Mammon is what we live for. It's the God, and much of what happens today, online gambling, the lottery, and all these things, they're all wrapped up in one thing. They believe that Mammon, the God of Mammon, can give us the peace and the security and everything we need if we sacrifice to this God. If we sacrifice long hours, if we sacrifice all that we have, then Mammon will take care of us. I read an interesting article by Mark Green last week, which says this, that Britons work between 3.5 to 5 hours longer per week per person than any other nation in the EU. And this has led to peace. No, you must be joking. It's led to an epidemic of depression, stress-induced disease, lower levels of parental engagement, relationship breakdown, greater anxiety, and diminished productivity and creativity. And that's just the managers. And the gods of Mammon are hard taskmasters. You know, they don't care at the end of the day about your anxieties or your stress. Part of Mammon's success is to keep us all permanently anxious about the future. You have to keep sacrificing. You know, when is it ever going to be enough? You know, when have you really put in sufficient in your pension and so on? You know what I mean? The whole of society is geared to keep you anxious and to keep sacrificing towards these gods. And it affects the middle classes the most because we've the most to lose. And so the middle classes today are extremely anxious people. And closely linked to the god of mammon are the gods of consumerism. You know, this modern shopping mall deliberately is designed to look like a temple. And the gods that are resident here have only one message, and that is sacrifice. Sacrifice all that you have for the latest designers, products, gizmos, and we'll give you the life. We'll give you the lifestyle, we'll make you feel you're really worth something, and we'll give you the peace that you deserve. The truth is, of course, that it doesn't matter how many visits you make to the temples of consumerism, the bottom line is our culture is deeply anxious and desperately unhappy. However nice the temples are with their soft pipe music, the gods have not delivered. They have not delivered the peace that we long for and the fulfillment that they have promised. The exposure to the same message again and again and again has shaped us to believe that these gods can answer our needs, our deepest needs. And these are just some of the influences of the idols of our time. We are, in fact, much more unhappy. In fact, they have greatly increased our anxiety by encouraging us to run up huge bills on credit cards. Britain is one of the worst countries in the world for the biggest debt in credit cards. Why? Because we've swallowed the lie. We've swallowed the lie in believing that these gods can meet our deepest needs. And there are many other modern gods, modern idols, that cause us to live anxious lives. And if Paul was here today, he would not be saying, celebrate these gods. He would be saying to us, celebrate in the Lord, because only Jesus cares. It's only he who cares, only he who loves us, only he has power to change us, only he can give us the peace and the shalom that we long for. You know, one of the tragedies of our age is because people are secularly minded and materially minded, when trouble comes, they've no way of really dealing with it. The gods don't care if you're going through relational breakdown, if you're suffering from stress-induced disease because you're driven beyond your limits in your workplace, because there is like a tyranny today that people have to sacrifice and sacrifice and sacrifice, and life's becoming extremely tough in the workplace, but the gods don't care. And many people have nowhere to turn today when everything goes wrong. You know, Christians have started taking initiative in one area which I think is very important, and that is setting up prayer cafes and drop-ins where people can come and you're able to pray with them. Prayer is so important in this age that is so anxious, when people no longer know God, when they feel there's nowhere to turn, and there's a role to play here for Christians in the workplace, that we need to be unashamedly more helpful in helping people in their distress, to be more compassionate because people don't know where to turn, and your prayers could make a difference. So often, very few people refuse prayer. That's been my experience. It's maybe yours as well. If you really say, look, I'd like to get alongside you on this, would you like me to pray for me? They generally say, yeah. Why? Because there's nowhere else to turn. The gods have left them disillusioned and distressed, and yet Christianity is a message into our age, because Jesus Christ can still bring that peace that they so much desire. And we can take the initiative to pray for people within the context of our work or our neighbours or wherever we are. I mean, I know even in the context of Tullydrone, where we're working with very difficult situations, nevertheless, people rarely refuse prayer. If you say, once go through the back and pray, they will want that prayer. And it makes a difference to their lives. So prayer is part of our celebration. Celebrating the Lord will shape our prayer life. You know, Paul says here, don't be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And Paul urges us to pray about everything, and I think he means everything, be it our work situation, be it our family situation, be it our friends, or even finding a parking space in town. There's nothing too trivial or too great for us to pray about. If it matters to us, it matters to God. And we're meant to pray about everything with thanksgiving, because God has our best interest at heart. You know, God is not like the pagan gods. When we draw near to God, we know he's his best interest at heart. He's given his life for us that he might draw us near and close to him. And then this extraordinary and wonderful promise is that as we do this and bring our request to God, the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. And how true this is. We capture the wonders of salvation afresh, celebrate the victory of Jesus, and bring our anxieties and worries to God and leave them there. He gives us his peace in exchange. And this peace is far more than the absence of hostility. It means wholeness, soundness, well-being that can only come through being reconciled to God through Jesus Christ. It's a peace that neither the pagan gods nor modern idols can give us. It's a peace that surpasses all understanding and all expectation. And that's why Christians can say, in the midst of sometimes dramatic storms, in crisis in their life, that they have peace with God. And the peace of God keeps us near to God. And it's that Paul says that will guard our hearts and our minds. The word guard here is a military term. It's used for standing guard around a city or protecting a treasure. And God promises that his deep peace will keep guard around our hearts like a squadron of soldiers protecting us from all that would assail us that week. You know, can you imagine? This is what God offers us, and so often we lose that, you know. And I mean, my life's the same as yours in many ways. On Thursday, you know, I'll give you an example of this. On Thursday, I had a meeting with Straightway guys, and then I was going to prison all afternoon. I hadn't started preparing this, and I was anxious about this sermon, as we always get anxious as preacher guys about preparing when it gets to Thursday and you're still all over the place. And there was a pastor's meeting in town that I'd been asked to go to, where seven pastors were gathering together just to pray. And I thought, I can't go to this. I'm far too busy and too anxious, and I'll give it a miss. And then I thought, no, I can't give it a miss. I need to go, you know. And I was anxious, and I went there anxious. And we didn't have any agenda. We just prayed. And we prayed for 2 hours solid in that time. In the last half an hour, I believe, we touched heaven, and we touched God. And I left that place. I went out to prison in the afternoon, and the peace of God filled my heart, you know. And it was like a rebuke to me as I prepared this. Make time for everything but prayer. And God saying, make time for prayer, because it's that makes a difference. And it's through that we recover the peace of God in our lives that's so easily taken away. God wants to come around us like that squadron of soldiers and protect us in peace. But we've got to give time for that prayer in bringing our things and our needs to God. And that was an important lesson for me this week. You know, life is so busy. Isn't that the case? You know what it is when the peace of God fills your heart, and you know when it doesn't. And generally, it's because life's going 100 miles an hour and we can't find the time to lay hold on God. And so that peace is taken away from us. And the great challenge today is to find the time to bring every anxious thing that we have in our lives to God. You know, I love Peterson's translation of this verse. He says this: let your petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers for God. Yeah? Let your petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers to God. And it is a privilege. It's a wonderful privilege to bring everything to God in prayer. Secondly, celebrating the Lord will impact our thought life. Someone has said, we're not what we think we are, but we think we are. But what we think we are. Sorry, I'll read that again. We are not what we think we are, but what we think we are. Now, Paul wants to encourage our thought patterns towards godliness, for he says here, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think of such things. And I don't need to point out to you that the idols of our time want us to habitually think in patterns that are completely contrary to the way of Christ and his coming kingdom. Just think of the all-pervasive media and the advertising and the magazines and what they habitually and subtly instill in our minds and thought patterns. You know, take the newspapers, the tabloids, for the most part, they thrive on focusing on what is untrue, ignoble, unjust, impure, ugly, of ill repute, brutal, and blameworthy. And how tragic that so much trash is read every day. I mean, no wonder it lands in the bin by evening. But this bombardment on our minds raises a serious challenge as to how do we celebrate the Lord and his ways in the midst of such a media-driven culture. Well, we need to be ruthless about what we read and what we watch. Martin Luther said, "You can't stop a bird flying over your head, but you can stop it nesting in your hair." And on that note, they stopped nesting in my hair a long time ago. But he's making a good point, isn't he? You know, we have not only to keep the bad stuff out, we need to put the good stuff in. We need to work at this. Sir Thomas More said this, "Occupy your minds with good thoughts, or the enemy will fill them with bad ones. Unoccupied, they cannot be." And that's the point. Our mind cannot be unoccupied. It's got to be occupied with something. So we need to fill our minds with good thoughts, true thoughts, pure thoughts. We need to meditate on God's word. We need to read wholesome literature. Get out and enjoy the wonders of creation. Expose ourselves to the beautiful arts and to sacred music and less television. Yes, hear me, much less television. All do us a world of good. And we need to make it our passion to celebrate the Lord and keep close to him. You know, I was in prison on Thursday, and one of the guys who's recently come to faith said to me that he'd stopped reading the tabloids. And I said, "Well, why have you stopped reading the tabloids?" He says, "Well, I'm getting bad vibes between me and Jesus." I like that, yeah. And I says, "Well, you're quite right, you know. As far as he was concerned, celebrating Jesus was very important, and he wanted to preserve that. And he was sensing this bad vibes because he was still reading all the rubbish of the day. And so he'd stopped reading it. Stop reading it because he wanted to preserve that harmony between himself and God. That was important to him. Now, there are different ways in which the devil can attack us, but we all need to give up the things that are causing bad vibes between us and Jesus. We want to hold on to the excellent harmonies of heaven in our lives. Otherwise, we'll lose the joy and we'll lose the peace. And we all know when we've lost it. Isn't that the case? We all know when we've lost that joy and when we've lost that peace. And generally, it's because of lethargy in our part, or letting things slip, and we lose the joy and we lose the peace. And Paul is saying here, you know, you need to fight for these things, strive for these things, that you keep the joy of the Lord in your life. Becomes a celebration every day. And thirdly, celebrating the Lord will encourage true discipleship. In this passage, Tom Wright says this in verse 9. He says, verse 9 is one of the most demanding ethical verses in the whole Bible. Not so much for the one who receive it, but for the one who gave it. And I like that. Paul says here, "Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice." That's a high demand. It's an amazing statement. I could never say to my wife or my kids, "Whatever you've learned or received from me or seen in me," that's a hard bit, "that you've seen in me, put it into practice." You know, I mean, I don't know how they would look. Probably a lot worse than they are right now. And this is why the text is so challenging. Paul here is encouraging the Philippian church not just to follow his teaching, but to follow his actions. He's saying, "If you look at my actions, do everything I do, practice what I do." You know, I mean, that is a really high standard. Now, godly people are an inspiration, and I'm sure we've all been, perhaps, influenced by people in our life who inspire us in certain ways, maybe in a certain area, like in their prayer life, for example, or their gentleness, or their faith, or their evangelism, or their parental skills, or their humility, and we wish we were more like them. Isn't that the case? You meet people like this, and you wish you were more like them. They've got something, and they encourage us to raise the bar in our own spiritual life. You know, they touch you in such a way that you think, "I need to aim for that because that's where they are." And you can sense it's real and they've got something profound that you don't have. And it's nice to meet people like that, that constantly raise the bar in our spiritual lives. Paul must have raised the bar in every area. But it's nice to meet people who raise it in different areas for us. And, you know, it's always hard to put godliness into practice, but it's a road to maturity. And we all know it's the only way to learn, isn't that right? be it sport or a piece of music. Think of the practice that's going in just for this Sunday morning. It's all to do with practice, practice. And it's exactly the same with the godly disciplines that we are meant to practice. We need to practice, practice, practice. Practice celebrating the Lord and finding joy in Him. Practice praying rather than worrying, you know. We probably, you know, there's a pain barrier in prayer, isn't that right? At least there is in my life. And if I don't pass through it and keep going, then generally that peace and that joy eludes me. There has to be a certain amount of time spent in prayer for us to reach that point. And we need to practice praying rather than worrying. Practice right thinking rather than occupying our minds with the trash of the day. And practice right living, taking care not to grow slack in the spiritual disciplines. And if we do these things, Paul says, if we do these things, then the God of peace will be with us. And we will live out the reality of that wholeness and soundness and well-being. And that's what God wants for His community. Yeah? So our celebrations are the best. You know, the reason they're not is because we are not often there enough. Isn't that the case? We lose that joy. We lose that peace. And that's the challenge this morning. That as a corporate body, we practice these disciplines. So when we come together, there is a sense that the Lord is near and that we make a difference and that people's lives are changed. And when we go to our work on Monday morning, we believe the Lord is near and we might take that initiative in prayer for the first time and pray for somebody in the office whose life's just going to pieces and they've nowhere to turn. And we might find with greater compassion than we had the week before. It's all to do with that close walk with the Lord. And we can make a difference. And that's a challenge this week when we go out, that we go and live these things and we practice these things and we celebrate the joy of the Lord. That's a great challenge for us. And I trust that you'll know the joy in your own life this morning. That's Paul's message for us, that we celebrate. We're going to do that now with this final song. Come on and celebrate. This gift of love, we will celebrate. The Son of God who loved us and gave us life.